From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief. It's Chloe, July and 24th. 10 stories, evidence-led, no fluff, small inputs compound. Let's get into it. First, from Katie Storino, 5 things absolutely worth the nuttles. We've all seen the trend on IG, and I'm bringing it to the lobby because I actually want to tell you why I think these 5 things are worth it for me. K18 Airwash. There's no dupe for this one, and I've genuinely looked. It gives me volumes, texture, and it means I can go longer between washes, which on a busy week feels like getting an extra hour back in my day. I forgot it once on a trip and ordered Sephora delivery. It's like having lip stuff with me at all times. I cannot be without it. Next, second, from the new fatherhood, the heroes our children deserve. I'm thinking of the way the 1990 World Cup hit me as a kid, 7, Irish English, watching Ireland make the quarterfinals for the first time. That moment turned a whole generation of us into football-loving kids, and it still shows up in the stories I tell my son now, living in Barcelona. What struck me most about the piece is how it layers the messy heroes we inherited, Jack Charlton, George Best, Eric Cantona, each brilliant on the pitch, but flawed off it. The author isn't trying to rewrite history. He's just pointing out that the legends we handed down were a mix of talent, excess, and occasional violence. Fast forward to today. The World Cup has become a commercial circus, from hydration breaks timed for ads, to a Louis Vuitton trophy case and sticker packs hidden in soda cans. Yet for his son, the tournament is pure obsession, collecting cards, filling charts, and watching every highlight. The takeaway feels simple. We can keep the love of the game alive for the next generation, but we also get to choose which stories we pass on. It's a reminder to hand over the joy of football without the baggage of the old school hero myth. Up next, third, from Dear Parents, Skipping School with Dixie Dillon Lane. Dixie Dillon Lane, a historian and homeschooling parent, sheds light on the evolution of homeschooling in the US. The movement, once countercultural and secretive, has become a mainstream educational choice, with many families opting in and out of homeschooling year after year. Research on socialization and safety is often cited, but the reality is that these concerns are largely unfounded. In fact, the top reasons families homeschool have shifted away from religious instruction, with many now citing dissatisfaction with traditional schools or a desire for more individualized learning. One notable statistic is that there are now more homeschooled kids in America than kids in parochial schools. This significant shift highlights the growing appeal of homeschooling as a viable educational option. Lane's book, Skipping School, delves into the history and current state of homeschooling, offering insights for parents who want to provide their children with a well-rounded education. And then, fourth, from Now That We're a Family, Top 5 Tuesday, Camp Dwight of the Week. Next generation, we are entering the full circle season of life. Katie was 7 years old when we first met at Camp Dwight. Our children are now hitting the ages we were when we would run around Katie's grandpa's Central Oregon property playing in the irrigation canal, jumping on the trampolines, and disrupting the teenagers' volleyball games. We returned home on Monday after 3 days of action-packed socializing, singing, hearing messages from Katie's father, Chad, and eating incredible food donated by Azure Standard. Next. Fifth, from Reimagine Peaceful Parenting with Sarah Rosensweet's Substack, Emotionally Immature Parents with Morgan Pommels, episode 229. Morgan Pommels, a therapist and coach, joins the Peaceful Parenting podcast to discuss the impact of having an emotionally immature parent, EIP, on children. An EIP struggles to manage their own painful internal emotions, which they often take out on their children. This can lead to children growing up without a strong sense of self, affecting their adult relationships and self-worth. Morgan explains that EIPs may have their own relational trauma or be modelling behaviour they learned from their own parents. In real-life interactions, EIPs may become controlling or mean when their children grow up and try to assert their independence. They may use shame to keep their children emotionally close, fearing abandonment. This can lead to children feeling controlled and suffocated. Morgan emphasises that EIPs often externalise their own feelings, making their children feel scared or anxious to keep themselves safe. Morgan specialises in helping adult children of EIPs heal from their experiences and develop a stronger sense of self. She stresses the importance of healing one's own wounds before parenting, as unresolved trauma can be passed down to the next generation. Up next. Sixth, from Cavella. 9 surprising Jewish facts about Little House on the Prairie. A new series of Little House on the Prairie just dropped on Netflix, and it's got us thinking about the show's lesser-known Jewish connections. Melissa Gilbert, who played Laura Ingalls Wilder, was raised Jewish by her adoptive parents, although she questioned her Jewish identity later on. The show itself tackled tough issues like anti-Semitism, and a few episodes even touched on Jewish characters and traditions. One episode, Come Let Us Reason Together, features a character named Percival Dalton who leaves his Jewish family to start a new life with his Christian wife. In another episode, The Craftsman, a Jewish craftsman named Isaac Singerman, teaches the Ingalls' adopted son Albert about the importance of giving back to the community. The episode also features a Yiddish song, Oifen Pripetchik, sung by Isaac as he works on a coffin. Interestingly, the show's executive producer, Michael Landon, who played Charles Ingalls, was Jewish himself, and the show's screenwriter, Paul Wolfe, wrote an episode that explored Jewish themes. Another screenwriter, Jonathan Gilbert, who played Willie Olson, is also Jewish. The show's theme song was written by David Rose, who was born to Jewish parents. And did you know that Melissa Gilbert, who played Laura, dated Michael Landon Jr. when she was a teenager? And then. Seventh, from Cavella. The Rolling Stones are paying tribute to late Jewish musician Amy Winehouse. The Rolling Stones have released their 25th studio album, Foreign Tongues, which includes a cover of Amy Winehouse's hit song, You Know I'm No Good. The band has been longtime fans and supporters of Winehouse, who they collaborated with on stage in 2007 at the Isle of Wight Festival. Winehouse was close to Stones guitarist Ronnie Wood, who supported her through her struggles with alcoholism. The Stones cover of You Know I'm No Good is a bright and energetic take on the original, and the band chose the song because of its minor key harmonica lead, which Mick Jagger felt he could have written himself. Winehouse's music has had a lasting impact on the music world, and her Jewish identity and culture are an important part of her legacy. The Rolling Stones' tribute to Winehouse is a testament to her enduring influence and the impact she had on music history. Next, eighth, from Cavella. The trailer for Sonny Sandler's Jewish Theatre Kid movie is here. The new trailer shows Don't Say Good Luck, a Netflix film led by Sonny Sandler as Sophie, a high school student who discovers her mother's cancer through an accidental call and then throws herself into a school play. The story leans into the closeness of her family, a deli-run home with a mezuzah on the door, and a budding romance with her co-star. The cast includes Max Greenfield as her dad, Melanie Lynskey as her mum, and a handful of familiar faces, Steve Buscemi, Baby Newworth, Stephanie Beatriz, and John Lovitz, adding depth to the family and school scenes. Julia Hart directs, with her partner Jordan Horowitz co-writing the screenplay, which adapts author Laura Hankins' own experience of theatre and family hardship. It's a heartfelt, modestly sized production that aims for genuine emotion rather than big screen spectacle. The film lands on Netflix on August 14th, so mark the date if you're looking for a quiet, tear-jerking night. That's The Read. Small inputs, compounding results. Back tomorrow. Want this every morning? It's free. Set up your own feed at storyaflow.com.